CliffCentral.com. All right. It is Tuesday morning, CliffCentral.com. Labang and I are here to keep you company. A little bit later on, Jonty Soul will be with us. We'll talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
We'll talk about all the good things and the bad things. Look at us exposing our ages.
Yes. Old school.
Yep.
So, let's just get straight into this because this is just insane. You know, this world we live in, I sometimes think, did I go to sleep last night and wake up on a different planet? This is the headline from the Telegraph this morning. Miss France beauty pageant sued for selecting contestants based on their appearance. Now,
okay.
It gives me a fucking headache, but let's try anyway. All right. So it's a beauty pageant. Do we know what a beauty pageant is?
Operative word being beauty.
Beauty, right. So you select people based on the appearance, mostly of their face, but also of their bodies. Yes. It is quite a big deal in a beauty pageant for you to be beautiful. It's kind of the barrier to entry. And that has been the case for all of the history of these stupid beauty pageants. Now, do I give a shit about a beauty pageant? Probably not. I think I stopped watching those when I turned like 10. Because there was better TV in South Africa after that. Everything was better TV than that in South Africa after that. Beauty queens have a place, I'm sure, that ribbons need to be cut. You know, sure. Children's hospitals need to be visited. Cars need to be launched with women wearing sashes around them. I don't know what the purpose is, but I'm sure there's a purpose for beauty queens. I'm sure there are lots of things that they do that makes society the better.
World peace.
Yes, and even if it's just because they look nice, that's also okay, right? Mm. I mean, you know, for some people, looking nice is the only contribution they make to the world.
Of course, and if that's your vibe, go for it.
We shouldn't take that away from them, right?
Let pretty people
let
do
them have, let them have their beauty anyway. So the Miss France pageant, the Miss France pageant has been sued for selecting contestants based on their appearance. So what's the bet that Miss France is going to be less interesting to the few people who are still watching beauty pageants? They will drop off as well. And eventually, Miss France will not be a thing. And that's fine. I mean, so we miss out on knowing who the prettiest girl in France is. I'm sure we'll manage just fine after that.
So these three women who have joined forces with the feminist group to file a legal complaint over discrimination and breach of... What is stopping them from creating their own pageant, which is not about beauty? What is stopping them from saying... Miss France personality and starting from scratch this award, blah, 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 stage, blah, blah, blah.
Because what happens in all of these places, in all of these awards ceremonies, these institutions, these competitions, is that the people who aren't winning get upset about not winning. So they come in and they ruin the competition. That's what they do. So then the award or the title is worth shit anyway, because now the whole reason it was established in this case because of appearance, beauty, is gone. It's like the minute the Oscars became political, everybody stopped watching. I didn't watch the Oscars. Did you?
Nope. Not a chance.
Do you care? Do you care what movie?
Not a chance. All I saw was that, like, the guy that did the whale, Brendan Fraser. I saw that he won. I was like, cool story, bro. And I kept it moving. It's what we speak about often, Gareth, is that these, you know, old systemy, organizationally events are still happening and they are so outdated, so unimportant that they're struggling to remain relevant. In the same way that for us, beauty pageants are exactly that. It doesn't fucking matter, you know,
but okay. There's people out there that don't care about stuff. But the Oscars used to be a thing. It was a prestigious thing. They're still pretending it's prestigious, but it isn't. You know, what's happened is now Brendan Fraser must get this award. I haven't seen The Whale. I'm sure he's terrific in it. Brendan Fraser doesn't strike me as being. I'm sure he's a great actor. It's about this fat gay guy who his daughter, he's embarrassed about being fat and what? It's a whole thing about like fat acceptance. That's what it is, right?
I mean, look, it's also a screenplay. So, like it was a stage, like a scripted type. It's a drama. It's a play that was done on stage and then they converted it into a movie. So when you actually see these little nuances of the storyline and how very clearly this is maybe not something that should be cinematically viewed, then you can start to appreciate that. Oh, okay. I get what they're trying to say. But yes, it's a story about a fat guy who's gay, who's, you know, sort of an absent father, who's ashamed, can't walk, can't do this, can't do that, and then falls to his death. He did very well in that role, though. Storyline wise, hey man, who am I? He won an Oscar. Great.
All right. Well, nice. But I promise you, he won most of the winning in this Oscar category was due to him being someone who's body positive in the role that he played. That it's gay accepting. You know, it's all of these things that Hollywood is obsessed with that we have to keep on making a political fuss about certain groups. And this is all that Hollywood has been doing for the last 15 years. And people are just sick of it. So where the Oscar used to be for the greatest directors, the best movies, the best acting, now it's all political. So it's lost its value. It's no longer valuable. Miss France has lost its value because it's no longer about the most beautiful girl in France, which is actually a thing. Like it would be quite something to be the most beautiful girl in France. I think a lot of girls, even ones who have other things going on in their lives, who are successful in business, who are moms, who are doing a bunch of things with their life, they'd love to be called the most beautiful woman in France. It's something people might have wanted once. But now, when people are suing because it can't be about appearance anymore, it's worth shit. So you can have your Miss France, because now it's worthless. You can have the Oscars, because now they're worthless. If you take away the reason, if you take away the reason for something to be good, then it no longer matters to people. Hey, good morning. You're on.
Yay.
Hello. Hello. Oh, wait.
Come in.
Okay, she's gone. Sorry. I thought there was
Do you remember that connecting sound?
I thought it was Miss France, but she's too busy. Yeah, I mean, look, the point is, you know, we used to also, I don't know if they're still doing this, but you remember like the cleverest students in South Africa who got the highest marks every year for matric? They'd be on the front page of the newspaper and we'd all go, oh my God, that kid is so clever. They did like 12 subjects in matric and they got 100% for all of them. Now we don't do that anymore. Now it's like, no, we don't celebrate excellence anywhere because everything is being watered down so that everyone can have some accessibility. And this will bring us to SVB, which we'll talk about in a minute or two. But before we get to that, Lebang wants to bring up something really important about epilepsy, and it's something I don't know a whole lot about. Why is this on your mind at the moment?
That is part of the reason why I want to bring it up, because a lot of people don't know enough about epilepsy. And this past weekend, one of our industry peers, Costa Titch, actually lost his life due to epilepsy. He was performing at Ultra. Right on stage, he had an epileptic fit, and very shortly after that, he was confirmed dead. So I actually grew up with a cousin who suffered from epilepsy, and if I didn't, I wouldn't have known anything about it. And it just kind of, you know, made me think about childhood and being exposed to somebody who actually suffers from this condition and how people know very little about it and therefore don't know how to react to the situation when somebody is having an epileptic fit. So on one end, you know, obviously rest in peace to Costa Titch. He was very, very young. He was only 27. And the fact that he lost his life in that way so publicly, where his videos are being spread all over social media, it's just becoming a norm now that everybody's going to know how you die, especially if you're a celebrity. But the information side of it. You know, if more people knew how to react and if more people had experience or even just like the entry level knowledge of what to do when a person has an epileptic fit, then things could be very different. So without sounding too,
yeah. But actually, what happened with this, and you interviewed him, he was in the studio with you and AKA, right? The last time you had AKA in.
No, they were they did an album together, in fact. So I interviewed both of them, at the same time. So it's just like back to back, you know, we just buried AKA a month ago. Now, you know, we have to bury Costa. It's very, very, very upsetting and very messy. But yeah, he was just performing, Gareth. He's been a performer his whole life. He started off as a dancer and then he became an artist. And, I think that the lights at Ultra are different to most stage lights. Like Ultra is very like doom, doom, doom in your face. These are lights. And I mean, if he's been performing his whole life, you know, one would assume that he's used to the lights and he's used to the stage, of which he was. But my thinking is that the level at which Ultra puts on a full show and how hectic those strobe lights can be must have affected him. I mean, everyone has their own assumptions about what it was. Could it be drug related, this or this or that? But again, having grown up in a household with somebody who has epilepsy, it's almost like a, like, oh, okay, this is what actually happened. It's very clear that he was just kind of shutting down. His nervous system was just not responding anymore. So it was very sucky. It was very sucky.
All right. I mean, this is an interesting comment by Congo Chris. He says, I went to Ultra in Cape Town and I must say the lighting rig was visually overstimulating. So if you have epilepsy, then obviously these lights can have a tremendous effect on bringing on a seizure, right?
Sure, sure.
And so, they reckon maybe that's what happened?
Yeah, no, that's what happened. You know, they've confirmed that he did have an epileptic fit, which was the cause of his death because, again, of this reaction to the lights. And your body just kind of goes into a state of shock. You just like sit there and like your body's literally just like, you're in a fit. So you're not consciously there. Your body's just like literally shaking. I remember, sleeping in a bunk bed with my late cousin who was sleeping at the top and I was sleeping at the bottom. And in the middle of the night, I just felt the bed shaking like, grrr. I was like, what is happening? I was like 4 years old. And then when I checked on him, he's literally sitting there and his body's just shaking and he's just in the state of like, you know, not being there. And I screamed, you know, and my mom always taught me that, look, if your cousin's having a fit, take a shoe and just like hit him under his foot. And that was just now a thing that I had to do. And every time I saw my cousin was about to have this fit, I would have to take a shoe and just start like slapping the crap out of his feet just so that he can get out of that. And I'm glad that in a way I know that because it helped him. I mean, may his soul rest his peace. He also passed on to epilepsy, but I'm glad that I had access to that information because every time now I'm in that situation, and you'd be surprised, I've been in that situation twice outside of a family member where someone around me is having a fit. I'm now equipped with just the entry level of what to do. Cause most people run. Most people don't know what to do. They freak out. I mean, in Costa's case, from what I understand, the bouncers were just kind of like shaking him and trying to wake him up. They didn't know what to do. And it's unfortunate, but I just think, you know, access to kind of this information will just help certain situations, even if you're not like medically equipped, but just knowing the little bit, you know, can change someone's life.
Well, okay, so our bot says people with certain conditions should also let the people around them know about it. A guy had an epileptic fit next to me, but at least I knew what to do. The other 29 of me didn't. So you say like slap the feet, but I mean, I've never heard of that before. Is that what you do?
That's what I did with my cousin his whole life. I ended up doing it with a complete stranger, in Newtown. I did it with, an extra family member, my boyfriend's cousin as well. Like if somebody falls and they're having an epileptic fit, grab a shoe and just start hitting them underneath their foot. That's just sort of the quickest way to get them out of that condition. I mean, it works sometimes, it doesn't, but for the most part, it just speeds up the fit.
Jeez. All right. It's know what to do. I would call you.
Look, don't call me, Gareth. Just take my advice. You know, hit them with a shoe. Make sure that they're not facing up because then they struggle to breathe. Like Ryan is saying in the comments, lay them on their side. You may never need to use this information, but you'll never know if somebody around you is having a fit or not. So, yeah, this weekend was kind of like, you know, like, oh, man. And again, when you think of epilepsy, it's common, but it's not, right? And people that have epilepsy aren't walking around saying, I've got epilepsy, you know, I might need this. It's not, they just kind of continue with life. So if ever this happens, if you're seeing somebody in public struggling, try and help them out. Most people won't know what to do. Most people will run. So
yeah. I'm still calling you.
Gareth.
I don't know anything about this. I mean, it might be worth actually getting a doctor on to talk about this, because
100%.
Epilepsy is a fairly common condition. And I just think it's tremendously sad that this guy died while he was at a live event. I mean, it must have been devastating for his family. We spoke about it briefly yesterday, and you know, these things are just really, really awful when they take place, but I don't know how much there is that you could do. And yes, your people in the comments are saying, well, light that stimulates, that brings on these epileptic fits. People are talking about the advice that they know, that they, people must lie on their side, like you've said. I'm not sure, but, I've never actually seen anyone having an epileptic fit, and I don't know would do. So I'm glad.
It's very scary. It's very scary, Gareth, because again, like, you're just unequipped and you're like, you're not sure what's happening. And it confuses you as the person watching, because your first thought is, oh crap, is this person dying? What's happening right in front of me? This person's literally just like shaking. Their body is shaking uncontrollably. Their eyes are just rolled back to their heads. It's so scary.
In the old days, would they have thought these people were possessed by demons? They would have, right?
100%. 100%. Yeah. And also, it's not something that...
would have been like, the demons have him!
Satanism!
Definitely.
Literally. It's so scary. So just, you know, try to help if you can, is the point. You know, if you can't, find somebody who can. But it's very sad that we've lost Costa in this way. His career was booming. You know, he was doing so well, and he was so young, 27 years old. And again, this video of him having this fit is making the rounds. Everybody can see what happened, and that just, it sucks so bad.
Have they put that on the internet as well? Because they did that with AKA shooting. I don't know who these people are who are standing around filming this stuff instead of helping.
Yeah, look, these are people that were in the crowd, right? These are audience members that paid to go and watch these artists performing, and they had their phones out recording everything. I don't think many of them intended to record the death of Costa Titch. They were obviously just recording the show, and they didn't stop recording when that happened. The show had to go on. I know that some of the artists refused to actually perform after that, but some of them just did. You know, the show had to go on. It was just kind of sad how that whole thing went down, but the whole energy at Ultra just changed. It was like something in the air, you know, like it was over essentially. From my friends that were there, were just like, after the Costa thing, everybody just, you know, left.
All right. Well, there's some useful info from Lebang, and I think it's worth thinking about. We've got Jonty Searle joining us in a short while. I just want to quickly go to this SVB story, because it's been in the news. It's probably one of the biggest issues in the financial world at the moment, and for good reason. There are lots of people who've lost lots of money by investing in the Silicon Valley Bank, and it has fallen apart. The number of withdrawals exceeded the amount of money in the bank, and they collapsed. This has happened before, but apparently, instead of paying attention to compliance and following the rules and making sure that the bank was liquid, apparently this place was running on a totally different set of values. So look at this quickly. Here's an interesting headline. Collapsed lender Silicon Valley Bank operated without a chief risk officer for 9 months, while the operations UK-based CRO is accused of prioritizing diversity initiatives. Silicon Valley Bank had no head of risk for 9 months, as the woke boss for Europe, Middle East, and Africa was busy organizing a month-long pride campaign and a lesbian visibility day. So let's just remember, this is a bank, but they were so busy doing a pride campaign and lesbian visibility day that the person who was in charge of risk didn't have their priorities right. And then if you look at, forget about that headline for a second, if you think maybe it's biased news or it's fake news or whatever, here's what SVB says about themselves. All right. This is their values statement. So here's what, this is a bank, by the way. This is not an NGO.
Through inclusion.
All right, but here it is. Here are their core values. Are you ready? We start with empathy for others. I'm going to remind you again at this point, this is a bank we're talking about. If you're going to a bank for empathy, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Any bank. I mean, Lebang, if you don't pay your interest on your bank account, or if you don't pay your mortgage, or if there's a debit order that comes off and there's no money in your account, how much empathy does your bank give you?
Sure. I mean, if I'm going there for empathy,
zero.
Sign me up to SVB.
All right. Then they say we speak and act with integrity. Good. But clearly not enough that when people come to the ATM for their money, you don't have any in there. That's not integrity. We embrace a diverse. Okay. This is the best part. I mean, we embrace diverse perspectives. What, like not having money that we've deposited into your account available to us when we want to take it out again? Is that the diverse perspective that you're talking about? You have a different, what, 2 + 2 = 4. Your diverse perspective is that 2 + 2 = 8. Figure that out for me. We take responsibility, they say. No, you don't. Evidently, you do not take responsibility. We keep learning and improving. Well, that's gone, I'm afraid. This is from their own, their brochure, their prospectus. Okay, here are their facts. Now, again, Gareth, this is a bank that is failed. No, they deserve this. Here's what they call diversity at SVB, okay? 60% of the total workforce is diverse. Now, I don't know what that means. You can't, one person isn't diverse. What does that mean? Does that mean that 67% of the people at SVB are what, orange? Are they all colors of the rainbow? Are some of them tall and some of them short? Like, explain yourself. 50% of senior leaders are diverse. 69% of board members are diverse. And 20% of the employees are, what does it say here? Members of,
are of the DEI Employee Advocacy Network.
Right.
Does
that's
the D in DEI stand for diversity? I'm sure.
Diversity. What is E again? Is something else? And inclusion is the I.
Empowerment.
Okay, so this is what they say about their bank. This is a bank. This is a place that's, you know, banking is hundreds of years old. This was developed. I mean, back in the ancient era, we had banking. And these were never things that made a bank great or not great. They were completely unimportant to banks. But this place has failed horribly. I want to show you who their investment committee is. All right. Here's their investment committee. And this person says quite rightly on Twitter, why is all the focus on SVB's failure of losing all their investments and not on the accomplishment of having an all-female investment committee in the banking industry? Pay attention to what really matters. Well, there are four women there. They count as diverse, apparently.
These are four white women. This is not diversity.
In fact, two of them, listen to this. This is how diverse they are. Exactly. This is how diverse they are, because diverse
doesn't
mean
anything. One is named Karen.
No, but wait. Here's the best part. The one is called Bryn Talkington, and the other one is called Jenny Harrington.
And the other is called Karen Firestone. This all sounds like the same person, just diluted. Aye.
So this is the investment committee, and ladies and gentlemen, this is what left wing diversity. What is the E for again? What is E in DEI?
DEI, like diversity, evolution.
I don't know.
Look, Gareth,
so fucking stupid. I've got to say that this is probably why everybody was so distracted by this shit that they forgot that their job as a bank was to look after people's money. That's what they're there to do.
Yeah. Sorry. I think they were trying to do this thing where, you know, it's almost, you know, as if this is the equity. Era. Sorry. Equity. Okay. Equity. Yeah. So it's almost like this is the era to raise your voice. If you've ever had an issue with something, if you've ever felt like you're in the minority or like the world isn't giving you enough attention, this is your time. If you have an alphabet that is between the L and the plus, it's your opportunity to speak. It's almost as though they use that as their whole ethos and whole company culture. Like, this is all we're going to focus on, so that on the outside, we look like everybody has a place here and everybody right. fits in. We're not L, we're not plus, we're not GTQ, we're not men, right. woman, female, his, her. Everybody is welcome here. That's what they're selling. Whereas they're forgetting that they are a bank. At their very core, keep our money safe, comrade. That is all we are requesting of you. Everything else is fluff. It really almost feels like that bank was made by like woke kids. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like somebody's child was walking in the corridor and was like, Dad, Mom, I've got an idea. The kids like this, this, that. And then they use that to, I don't know, it just feels very Hollywood-y and America-y. It's very like, ugh, you know? I wouldn't bank with them at any point.
I completely echo what Lebang is saying here. I think that these people have their priorities in exactly the wrong order. And it's no wonder that they failed, and good that they failed. I'm sorry for everybody who's lost their money in this bank. It's a totally different situation to the other acronym, VBS. You know, this is SVB. Here in South Africa, VBS stole people's money, but in a much more old school way. They just stole the money. So you know what? You want to go along with this diversity, equity, inclusion crap, and it becomes your mantra, and you let left-wing politicians force you to do this in your private company. Good luck to you. You'll be the next one. I look forward to seeing more and more companies fail based on this dumb mantra, DEI.
If this DEI thing is all that you do and it's what you build on, then you are more than likely bound to fail. If it is merely a portion of what you do, and if it is something that you truly believe in and you're doing it organically, but you're still doing your job, so you're doing your core thing, but on top of that, you're saying, hey, man, this is who we are. This is what we believe in. Then I can support that. But if you're just kind of doing this for the audience, dog, peace.
They did. Of course they're doing it for the audience. The same way the Oscars are and Miss France is. It's all related. Anyway, all time thing. For us to move on. It's all political. And the politicians have taken over everywhere. And the places that they couldn't take over before, they're now starting to tell us how to govern these places, like private companies. Sure. And companies are going along with it because they've got stupid people in HR who put these things into play. Sorry, that's the way it works. And they're morons. And they deserve to fail. And I can't wait to see more of it happen. Anyway, so let's move on to something completely different and to someone who we haven't spoken to in a long time. His name is John T. Searle. He has been working in the field of conscious sexuality for over 20 years, Lebang. He's created healing processes, workshops, and material that has helped many people to create fulfilling experiences in relationships. Of course, he also presented Sex Talk every Friday on Cliff Central for the first few years. Here he is. He's back. John T. Searle. Hello, John T.
Morning, John T.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you? How's everybody?
Good. We're very good. Lebang and I were just talking about how much we miss Sex Talk.
thank you. I miss it too.
Wait, where are you? Sitting
things there.
Are you sitting in your garden? Because it looks very peaceful there where you are.
I'm looking over Kemp's Bay Beach.
Ooh, oh, must be so nice.
Good.
Yeah, I'm teaching workshops in Cape Town this week.
A bit of a sex on the beach there.
Tell us about these workshops, John. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, so they're about healing, they're about exploring the inner erotic mind, some sexual skills in them, some massage, a whole range of experiences to improve intimacy and sex and pleasure and so much of our inner journey.
Sounds bloody marvelous. All right, and nice to do that in Camps Bay. I mean, this is the perfect setting for people to get sexy, right?
It is. But, you know, sensuality is everywhere. And I realized this the other day. I went for a really cold water swim. And normally we think of sexuality as this kind of warm and fuzzy and wonderful and fireplace and all of that. But even if you're out walking in the wind and the rain, that's sensual and it makes you feel alive and vital. So it's like, you know, the whole expression of being alive is about our sensuality.
Well, I mean, you've spoken a lot about sex on Cliff Central, and you had your own show, and it was really fascinating to hear all the different perspectives and how much, you know, our understanding of sexuality has changed. What's new since we last had you on? I mean, there's always new stuff being discovered, the new perspectives being brought in.
There are people who are figuring out new ways of expressing themselves sexually and otherwise. What's news from the point of view of John T. Searle? What is the cutting edge of all of this stuff right now?
Well, firstly, I went to teach in Ireland last year and I fell in love. That was like new big thing for me because it's been a long time. So that was a really big thing for me. And there's some very interesting things. It's about so much of putting sexuality in the context of our lives. And that's so important that it's not separate from everything else that we do. It's not something that we kind of switch on, we use it, we switch it off again. We're sexual beings all the time. And you know what you guys were talking about before, the whole work story, that's kind of, it switches on and it switches off. Instead of it being part of the fullness of who we are, which becomes the authenticity of who we are, not just a label that we take on for a few moments. And a big part of our sexuality is dropping a lot of the labels because the labels become the limitation instead of opening to the freedom.
All right. Don't just breeze past this whole thing of you falling in love. Tell us a little bit about this. So you went off to Ireland and you were there to give some courses. And who's this person that you met? And tell us what's happened.
She walked into the room. I was giving it was the first free talk. And I took one look at her, and it was something inside of me just went, oh, fuck. And it was just one of those moments of, wow.
So all right. Straight out of the movies.
Yeah, it really was. It kind of felt like that.
This person, is she going to be moving to South Africa? Are you thinking of going to Ireland? Are you doing the long distance thing? Like, what's your?
Well, we've spent quite a lot of time. We've spent some time together. She was here for 5 months. I can't see myself doing the weather in Ireland. I must be honest. For like 2 or 3 weeks, it's fine. But after that, oh, and sunshine. We're talking about it. How do we work it out? How do we bring two lives together? How do we integrate this?
John, I'm sure you see like a lot of couples. Sorry, Gareth. Like, I can just imagine how many couples come to you for advice and for counsel because, you know, a lot of couples get to that place in their relationship where maybe the sex gets a bit stale and they're told, spice it up in inverted commas. What's like the common problem that that you've seen when couples approach you? What's the one thing that you can say most couples have experienced for them to sort of get to that that wall? And most importantly, what's your advice to them? We're taking notes.
So they actually don't know how to communicate about what they want.
Okay.
And that's their biggest thing, that they have desires. Often it's not the same desire. You want one thing, I want something else. That doesn't mean that that's a problem, but we don't know how to communicate our desires, and we don't know how to have these honest and authentic conversations because there's a lot of fear around that. What does it mean? So if I express this, it brings up a fear. What does the fear mean? And we kind of can get beyond that fear to say, let's explore this. Don't make a decision to do this or not do it. Don't make a decision to stay together or to separate. Let's explore something. And if we can start that exploration, that's where so much starts to change. So much of it comes down to communication. And underneath that is actually knowing ourselves, knowing who we are and what it is that we want.
When you talk about communication and sex, you're not just talking about during sex. So you're not saying like, faster or, you know, a little bit more to the left or any of that stuff. You're saying communication generally, right? Because you have to have an open-minded communication with the person you're having sex with so that the sex is wonderful and pleasant and beautiful for both of you and so that you are involved in a conversation, physical and emotional and mental.
Yeah. So think about what you might want from a sexual experience. And if, you know, Gareth, if I asked you and Lebang, if I asked you, it would be different and it's different every day. So what is it that we want from a sexual experience today? Do we want to feel more intimate? Do we want to have a mind-blowing cosmic orgasm? Do we want it to be comforting and soothing and loving and tender? Do we want it to be exploratory? So fulfillment is quite a wide range of things, and most people put it into one little kind of 10, 15 second orgasm kind of squirt in the dark thing, which often is not very fulfilling. So when we want more, we have to start looking at, well, what does that really mean? What is the more? And to be able to communicate that.
All right. So I'm going to open this up to questions from the audience. You're more than welcome to send us a message in the comments section. We will relay that to Jonty. Or if you'd like to call us, maybe you want to talk to Jonty yourself and, you got follow-up questions or you want to explain something to him that you can't put into words, in written words, then do that. You can get hold of us 083-295-5769. Tell us what's on your mind and we'll put you on to Jonty. He wants to hear from you. He wants to solve your problems. This is what he does. How are the classes and the yoni massages going?
Beautiful. Very exciting. You know, there's always new things to explore and we learn more about the body all the time. There's new things coming out about the nerve structure inside the yoni, for example. There's new things coming out about male sexuality. There's a really interesting new idea that's taken quite big root, which is we think that we need to be aroused to have sex. Like we wait for that arousal, or we wait for someone to turn us on. And actually, if you turn that around and you think, what would I like to feel? What would I like to share with someone? You don't need to be aroused to have sex.
Okay, what do we need to be?
We just need to have an intention to feel something. And we can go into an experience and see what arises and what develops. Because such a big thing with couples is the gap between arousal states. Like, I'm really turned on, you're not. What do we do with that? And when we can just start exploring something, start touching, start kissing, and something starts to grow within us, and that can really change things because so often people say, oh, I'm not turned on or I'm tired. Or, you know, we give so many reasons why not to have sex.
Sure.
Instead of, is there a different way in rather than just waiting to get turned on?
Yeah.
Well, Elliot, Carl has Jonty, this comment. Hold on, Lebang. This is very important. Carl says, Jonty, you need to figure this new girlfriend situation out before the World Cup because Ireland and the Bucks could be up against each other while you two are up against each other. You need to figure this out. So that's very good advice from Carl. You need to make a plan, Jonty. Ace that. All right?
Jonty, that is a good one, Carl.
Earlier on, you said that being sexual is not something you switch on and off. Like, you can live it and be it and breathe it. Like, you can walk through the office and be sexual. I'm kind of struggling with that concept. Can you sort of unpack it for me in a way that I can understand? Because I do believe you, and I do believe that sexuality is part of our energy and our flows and our chakras and all of that stuff. But how do I walk into the office and be fully confidently a sexual being without being, aggressively sexy and inappropriately sexual?
Yeah. So our sexuality isn't only our genitals, and it's not only about sex with someone else. It's about our vitality and our creativity and our life force and our confidence and our spark and our sense of humor. Sure. So it's about being fully in your body, and your genitals are a part of that. So can we
I hate to interrupt this. Yeah, good morning. You got a question for Jonty. Let's go to the calls. We can come back to this in a second.
I do have a question for you.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm 71 years old. I don't have a partner. How the hell can I have a nice sexual engagement with anybody? Does he have a solution for that?
71 years old. Jonty, help.
This question wasn't for you.
The look on your face alone.
First of all, have you got one of those mini vacuum cleaners you can just get the dust off of there for? Because that might be a good starting point.
Come on, Gareth. No.
Probably
just the
feather duster and then the vacuum.
All right. So go on. Give us the lady some advice, Jonty. Let's help her out.
So why is 71 a limitation? It's not. It's kind of firstly a number, and you don't have to stop having sex at any age in life. You know, there's such a huge increase in older people having sex. We've had older people on workshops, couples in their late 70s, who are having the most amazing sexual experiences. So much of that's a belief.
She doesn't have a fucking partner, Jonty. Where does she start?
Okay, well,
exactly. Well, there's no fucking going on here because there's no fortune you ever.
Well, maybe there's a whole new venture for all of us in senior swinging clubs. I mean, I don't mean to be glib here, but you know, maybe there's a whole thing there. Finding a partner is—it's not so hard because I'm going to tell you why. On a lot of the dating and sexual sites, there are older people looking to have sex, and there are younger people looking to have sex with older people. So you have to put it out there. You have to start looking. There is somebody, like there's a socket for every plug. I'm trying to be kind of tactful and polite here.
Tell me something. Wouldn't it have to be hard to have sex?
You said it's not hard to have sex.
All right, okay. She's taking the piss. All right, very good. Well, I mean, listen, what you're saying is horrific, but it's true. There are lots of very old people on these dating apps, and they also need sex and love.
Yeah, why should it stop? You know, we're sexual and sensual beings from the moment we're born till the moment we die, So much of that is a belief. So much of that is the social conditioning, because the media gives us this thing about you have to be beautiful for this to happen, and everybody in porn is beautiful and amazing, instead of, no, that's not the real stuff. It's real people having amazing sex lifelong.
Sure, teach us.
Do you know, Jonty, do you know any people in their 90s who are still having regular sex?
Not personally, but I'm sure that that's come up somewhere along the line.
All right. Well, on that note, Carl says he's lost his breakfast. But let's
Carl, you need to be tougher than that to stay on Cliff Central. Come on.
Jonty, would you advise for people like our caller who are on their own, would you advise for them to have sex toys or to pay for sex or to seek out a partner or to just give up completely? What would you say?
Well, certainly don't give up. Secondly, seek out a partner. And then explore yourself. Sex toys can be fabulous for that. There's no question. And that can be really exciting for someone who's maybe never explored that before.
And I think most people generally, like, sex toys are always, like, positioned as this, oh, don't go down there. If you use sex toys, it means you can't find the human, what. I don't think it's about that. It's almost like an added layer to discovering who you are as a sexual being. The toy isn't replacing, a person. It's just a tool to figure yourself out and find out what it is that you like. And, you know, therefore, it'll be easier for you to then communicate to the said person, if and when you find them, that, hey, this is in fact what I like.
Yeah. And if you look at some of the toys, I mean, no human being can do what some of these things are designed to do. So can give some amazing pleasure because that's what they're designed for. I mean, even you explore some of the bondage things and you see these machines and, you know, in some of that, there's these things called a fucking machine. And like, no single human being with a penis could ever come close to doing what these things do.
Yep.
Can't hear you over the sound of the machine and then in the studio.
You need more like a jackhammer sound.
What's that?
Like a jackhammer sound.
Yeah. All right, so Jonty, I mean, when you talk to couples, like Lebang was saying earlier, she asked, what is the most persistent problem that these people have? But there are people who also have major mental or psychological hang-ups with regard to sex. And I mean, they obviously, you know, they go and see therapists and psychologists, and maybe they are, you know, severely depressed. There are all kinds of very ordinary reasons why people may be turned off to sex. There are also these very rare people who are completely asexual, right? Have you ever encountered any of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And
if that's
their choice and that's their natural expression, that's fine. The important thing with that is to make it that it's an authentic expression, not that I'm choosing not to have sex because I have so many issues or pains or hurts that I haven't resolved. And those are quite different things.
Yeah, that's right. That makes sense. Because a lot of people, obviously, they're not willing to accept that they've just got like traumas, or they're just not willing to explore. That's and it. Therefore, oh, I'm asexual. Sorry, not willing to go into that side of life. Whereas like being a sexual person, I think everybody, you have it. It's in you. You're a human. But I see a nice question here from the comments, Gareth. I think the question was from Ancient Ether. How do you define sex addiction? Now, this one's interesting because there's a lot of celebrities that have publicly been shamed for being sexual addicts and for being, you know, addicted to certain things and therefore messing up their marriages and their lives, blah, blah, blah. Jonty, is there such a thing as too much sex?
Well, not really. At some point, you know, you need a rest because there's times where our bodies and our genitals need some regeneration time and some downtime and some resensitizing time. But like with any addiction, you have to look at what's underneath it. So the interesting thing is that there is a school of thought saying that sex addiction actually doesn't exist, that it's a label that's kind of been put out there, which makes a lot of what people do okay, and it actually might not be real. That's one level of it. With any addiction, you have to look at what's underneath the addiction, and it's generally the feeling. So an addiction is generally a response to some kind of pain, because that's how we cope with the pain.
Sure.
So if we start looking at what's underneath that, what's lacking, or what is it that we're trying to cover up, or what is it that we're seeking, that's where it starts to become a different kind of exploration.
All right, well, let's turn our attention, to some of the newfangled stuff that's going on. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who are claiming now that they are only the sapiosexuals, people who are attracted to intelligence. There are pansexuals. I still have someone has to explain to me the difference between a pansexual and, for example, a bisexual. Right? You would be the right person to ask these questions to, Jonty. How do you explain these new terms which are cropping up that people are using to label themselves? They're choosing them as parts of their identity.
I think some of them are really valid simply because they become an expression of who we are and what really does turn us on. So for some people, intelligent conversation is a turn on, it is arousing. But look at what about it turns us on, because having a really wonderful, stimulating conversation makes us feel alive and it makes us feel vital, and we express that sexually. Other things in our life can do the same thing. I think there's also a point where the limitations or where the labels become the limitation simply because we say, well, this is the only path of arousal. And then we tend to cut other things out. So, you know, like if you look at the label bisexual, for example, there's an enormous judgment of bisexual people by some of the sexual community because it says, well, you don't actually know what you are. But what about a fluidity that says, in this moment, this turns me on? I've been working with quite a few people who have actually ended up in same-sex relationships who never considered themselves to be gay. Of both genders, but they fell in love with a person, with a soul, with genitals.
I know a couple of girls who also fell in love. They were never into girls before, but when they met each other, they fell in love with each other, which is precisely to your point. But what is a pansexual?
So, as far as I am aware, a pansexual is simply somebody who is turned on by pretty much everything. And that's absolutely fabulous. You know, there's no reason not to be.
It can be a little bit distracting at the office, though, Jonty. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is, but you're not going to be attracted to everybody. That's the thing. Walk through the Cliff Central studio. There's people there who you might be attracted to, people you won't be. Walk through.
But I mean, what I'm saying is, in any office place, it's not appropriate for you to be sexually turned on around coworkers. Can you imagine in an auditing firm, everybody's crunching numbers, And there's someone who's pansexual walking around, and they're super turned on by all these number crunching auditors. I mean, it's frightening beyond belief.
This is sounding like greed and gluttony. People just want to fuck everything. Y'all just greed.
Yeah. Yes. All just greedy. Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe that's a part of our true nature. Maybe there's a part of us that says, I do just want to fuck everybody. And, you know, we've become so conditioned to kind of suppress that. But
this is unbelievable. Oh, this is fantastic. This is fantastic. I love it. Oh, I love it.
There's a very big difference between being aroused and acting out on that arousal.
Mm. Okay.
You know, that I can look at somebody and I can think, wow, they are really attractive, or they really turn me on. And that's totally an inner state. And that's my inner world. That doesn't mean I have to do anything about that. That doesn't mean I have to tell you I'm attracted to you. Doesn't mean I have to tell you that I want to have sex with you. It simply is. Mm-hmm. That's my inner state. Because if we look around and if we become more sensual and more sexual, more people become more attractive, because we look at things and we find more beauty in things. We find more, like in the curve of a face or in a movement, or you walk past somebody in a mall and there's this amazing fragrance that they're wearing, and something inside of us just goes, right. We don't have to do anything with that. That's the difference.
Yeah. I hear that, and I think, Jonty, it sounds great on paper, but I don't trust human beings with the ability to have self-control and to keep that to themselves and leave it in the inner sphere. Human beings will almost always act on it and almost then like feel like they deserve it and it's theirs and they'll do anything to go for it. I mean, in this context of office talk and whatever, I completely get it. But on the opposite spectrum, we have so many people who are using sex and the hunger for it, and they take it, and they rape women, and they rape young girls and young kids because they just want it. They don't have that ability to just self-control and contain the things that they see that they are aroused by and attracted to. So on one end, I hear you, and I think definitely that should be the case. But we live in a society where people are just taking and forcing. So how do we find that balance then? Because it's nice that that sex is a beautiful thing and it was intended for us to, you know, see the beauty in and, oh, this is, so, you know, all that stuff. But the truth is, this is our reality. It can get very dark and dangerous if misused.
Yeah, absolutely it can. And that's where the inner journey, the journey to conscious sexuality, the journey of tantric sexuality, is exploring our own selves to know our own selves. And to know then, how do we express that in a way that's authentic and appropriate? And how do we express that in a way that's respectful and honoring? And that comes from honoring me. Because if I honor me, then I'm not going to do that in a way that's going to take away from you.
Sure.
So when somebody's doing that, they're not honoring themselves.
There's a whole category of inappropriate and, frankly, criminal behavior, which, you know, a whole lot of people just have no self-control in any sphere of their lives. And sex is just a part of that, where they act it out. See, I'm curious also, you know, these days it's become much more difficult for people to flirt with each other because there are rules in, you know, workplaces, even socially. You know, if you make an inappropriate move as a man or a woman, frankly, sometimes you can get into a huge amount of trouble. And I think people have started to misinterpret signals, and it's mostly because we live on screens. And a lot of people are used to communicating, especially young people, on screen. So they don't actually know how to have conversation, how to flirt, how to tease and play with each other and kind of warm up to a relationship or an encounter of some kind. And that's obviously a big problem.
Yeah, we've taken some things way too far, you know, in the name of political correctness. We've just gone way, way overboard. And the whole work story is a part of that. You know, when people want to reissue Roald Dahl books with certain words moved out, taken out of them, it's like a symptom of the society that's walking on eggshells instead of having authentic interactions with people. And being able to understand something in the context that it is And I'm not saying that everything is okay and it's okay to say everything. But we've gone to a place where we don't know how to have conversations, where we don't know how to flirt. And that's such a good example because it's such a beautiful expression of men and women, where there's so much in it that can be fun, that can be, you know, somebody after a few moments of that kind of conversation with someone, you feel alive and you feel excited and you're creative and it wakes something up within you. That doesn't mean you want to have sex with that person, but we've immediately kind of taken it from A to Q without understanding anything
and
in
plus,
between.
Q plus.
Yeah, and we've just put it in this context of that we've lost so much of what it is in genuine human interaction, that it's easy to have sex. It's not easy to have relationships and be intimate today. And that's what technology has done. It's taken us away from that human connection.
Well, just judging by the comments and the calls today, we need to get you on again very, very soon. But it's great to catch up with you, Jonty. And I hope you'll enjoy your sex classes and outdoor sex and whatever else you're up to there in Camps Bay. And I hope the neighbors don't complain, you know.
Me too. But if I have a problem, I'll say, Gareth said it was okay for us to do this on the beach.
Don't you dare involve me. I don't want to be involved in whatever you've got going on. All right. Thank you. There's Jonty. All right, there's John T. Searle, everybody.
Having a bit of sex on the beach. That's an interesting take, though, for real. Like, it's very, some of the things are a bit difficult to comprehend. But, I mean, if he's made this his whole life's work, then there's something to be said about
it. Amazing. He's very serious about it. I mean, he's got a sense of humor. But John T. takes sex way more seriously than anyone I've ever met. I love this. I don't know if it's a real name, but Lawrence Hogheimer says, thanks, Jonty, with an eggplant and has been making rude comments basically the whole way through, which I love. All right. So
that's your vibe.
Special thank you to our 71-year-old woman who called in and asked about sex.
You've
got to feel
very
brave, and we appreciate the call. In fact, I want you to call again anytime you like, because calls like that make my day. It's my favorite kind of call to take. before we say goodbye, coming up in the next hour, they're celebrating 40 years of Hunt Lascaris, which is four amazing decades of growing brands, growing talent and winning. And this agency is just legendary. People throw that word around a little bit too much for my liking these days. But the two founders of TBWA Hunt Lascaris, John Hunt and Reg Lascaris, sat down and spoke to me just a short while ago and reminisced a little bit about how and where it all began those years ago, from the boot of a car to the first world-class advertising agency out of Africa. And they're still blazing an incredible path into the future. If you missed this discussion, you can find it on our app or on the YouTube channel under Gareth's Guests, but we encourage you and invite you to listen to it right now. 40 years of Hunt Lascaris, Reg and John next. You've got to hear from these two guys how it all began. It's a really, really cool story. We've got a lot of other really great interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks, so stick around for all of those and more. And we will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.